I do want to thank Elder Lloyd for inviting me to come speak today. This is my first time speaking in front of a church, but not my first time speaking in front of a crowd. I was a military instructor in San Antonio, Texas for 4 years. I'm used to teaching younger soldiers, sailors, and the Marines how to train military working dogs. So I'm used to maybe being a little more direct with the people I'm speaking to, so I ask y'all to kind of bear with me a little bit. See the head go north to south, and not. I'm used to being a little more direct. This is something a little different. Elder Lloyd, I was in San Antonio with Mike Rogers, and Elder Lloyd's been talking to him. I feel like I've known him a longer time, speaking to him on the phone. He asked me to come speak to you all today. He's invited me to New York, but first I got some things I want to go over. I'm from a small town in Kentucky, a small town with one traffic light, and he keeps inviting me to New York, and I'm pretty intimidating when you mention New York to a guy who grew up in a town with one traffic light. It is going to happen. I am going to make my way. I will get with him. I mean, it's going to happen. It sounds pretty intimidating. But there's some things I would like to talk about to you all. I want to talk about my family, how much family means to me, about addiction, how addiction has hurt, not really hurt, but how it has caused some sorrow that I'm living in my day-to-day life, and the loss of my brother. That's been something day-to-day. And the hymn we just sang, Farther Along, cheer up my brother. Farther along, we'll understand it all by and by. And said, I grew up the son of David Keith Ashley and Grace Gwendolyn Ashley. We grew up in Kentucky, but we moved around some growing up. So, I mean, I think that made a lot of us closer. I really admire my dad, my mother. And I've been to different leadership seminars, stuff through the military, and I'm reminded of one thing they said, like, if you hold up individual fingers and stuff, it's not that powerful. But whenever you have a fist, it stands strong together.
Amen.
And I think moving around as a family, that made a lot of us closer. My dad, I truly do admire. My mother, my father. And one of the lasting memories of my childhood is every day growing up as a family, we had dinner at the table. And then for the younger kids in here, this is before the era of smartphones, tablets, TVs, or however you want to look at it. This was our time as a family. We ate. There was nothing we'd talk about our day. But every single day I can recall, my dad would ask me at the dinner table, what did you learn today? What did you learn today? And as a little kid, I'm questioning, why is this old man, why is he asking me about my day at school? I mean, it was much more than that. My dad, he worked 50, 60-hour weeks. He took the time. He wanted to know about my day, what I learned. And not only that, it pushed me every day. I try to become better today than I was yesterday. I try to strive. It's something that simple my dad did, teaching life lessons, and he probably didn't even mean to right then. He just really wanted to know about my day at school. And then my mother, she is such a strong, emotional woman. She is shorter than my stature, but she's probably one of the strongest emotional people that I know, and I truly strive to be like my mom and dad. And then growing up, your siblings, your brothers, I got two older brothers I was blessed to have. Me being the youngest, I probably got picked on the most, but it made me so close to my brothers. They're the ones you want to emulate. They were stronger, bigger, faster, smarter. They're people that I truly strive to be like. My oldest brother, he joined the Navy. He was one of the biggest influences in me joining the military as well. My middle brother, Sean, I wanted to be like him growing up. He was a faster one, stronger one. I ran track and cross country because of him. I would hear him wake up at 4:30 in the morning to go run before school. I mean, I think he taught me work ethic, drive, and dedication. I learned so much through my family and life that I am truly grateful. And then one of my favorite verses is actually my grandmother's favorite verse. She passed away when I was 2. This is the day the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad. That is one of my favorite verses. I try to read every day. And something else I strive not only to be better every day, I think we all should do if we do it,
I think you'll have such a beautiful life if to have your emotions move to tears every day. It can be happiness, sorrow.
And a lot of people in the times we live in, a lot of people see this as a sign of weakness.
Right.
But the strongest person ever walked this earth, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, Christ. Mm-hmm. In John chapter 11, the 35th verse, it is one of the shortest verses in the Bible, but it simply states, Jesus wept. And I think that verse is so powerful that it shows the compassion that Jesus had for us. And it's something I try to do every day. Every day of my life now, I try to do that. And then here lately, I'm finally getting to where I can turn tears of sorrow to tears of happiness when I think of my brother.
Amen.
It's taken that long, and this is the first time I've really spoken of my brother in this public capacity. So, bear with me. But I remember the phone call. It was December 30th, 2014, the 31st. I was walking into work like any other day at 6 in the morning. I was actually about to text my dad. I think it was about a sports game. We text back and forth. We stay pretty close watching college sports. And it's right as I was about to text him, he was calling. And then I was a little worried. 6 in the morning, I mean, my dad called me. That's not the norm. And around the same time frame, I mean, my grandfather, he was battling cancer. I mean, it sounds wrong. I thought maybe he took a turn from a worse. My mother was in 6 hours away helping to take care of him. And as soon as I answered the phone, my dad said, Sean had died. Those words, I can still hear those words saying, like with the hurt, I can hear the hurt in my dad's voice that Sean had died. And then my first reaction was no. I mean, my first mind, I'm thinking, no, that did not happen. I'm thinking you're wrong. He's alive. He's going to be okay. And as soon as I got off the phone with him, I called my mother. I'm walking in the building. And then as soon as my mom picked up, I knew that he was gone. And it was something I'll remember. And I need to actually talk to my parents some more, my oldest brother. I say that day I have a loss of time. As soon as I found out, I felt numb. I don't remember walking in the building. I don't remember talking to my supervisors, telling them a lot of the car ride to get 6 hours to where my mother was. I don't remember a lot of that. My dad said he don't even remember calling a lot of the family, that, you know, he was making those phone calls, and he really don't have a strong recollection of making those calls. I think denial was the hardest part. When I first died, I'm like, well, I didn't know a lot of it right away. And then once I got to Louisville, to where my dad was, I was speaking with him. My dad, he was getting ready for work that morning. He worked in the mornings. My brother, he worked at night. As my dad was getting ready for work, he saw my brother's light on. He saw the light on. He's like, well, I'll go say good morning to him. I'll go see how he's doing. And he said when he walked into the bedroom, he found him collapsed on the floor. And he said when he first saw him, he knew that he was probably gone. He tried CPR. He said the police and paramedics, they showed up so fast. And he said the police officers and everyone there were so professional and helpful. And he said they truly were. And they asked if they could look around. And then that's when they found the heroin from the overdose. And my dad said he never felt so alone once they left and he was there. And my brother was still there. They were waiting for the coroner. My dad said he never felt so alone. He said he stayed on the ground, laying next to my brother. I mean, that was so hard to picture. He didn't want my brother to be alone, so he stayed there laying next to him until the coroner came. So a lot of the questions I try to ask, like, why?
My brother, he recently moved to where my parents lived, and he looked like he was doing better. How did addiction take a hold of him? He was looking healthier in pictures. He was looking better. How did it get a hold? The things I had to ask myself every day. I think that was the hardest thing to do, was going when I went to where my parents were. The hardest thing to do was going to plan the funeral service. A parent. I just think a parent should never have to plan a funeral service for their son. And me as a brother, that was the hardest thing for me to see both my mother and my father planning the funeral service. That still, it didn't seem real. I think when I was at my grandfather's house when we were waiting, when we were playing and stuff, for some reason I thought in my mind, I think my brother's going to walk through that door and he's going to be okay. I don't think a lot of it truly sat in until we had the visitation. That's not, I think a lot of it, that he's not coming back. He's gone. I do. My brother, I think he fought. He had alcohol problems, pain pills. But to tell you the truth, I never realized it led to a heroin problem. I was totally, I think, caught off guard when I found out it was a heroin overdose. I remember phone calls and certain conversations I've had with my brother that he was having his troubles. I can look at time now, I'm more upset, I think, with myself. Certain times he would call me and I would say, you know, like, I love you, brother, I love you. I want to see you do well. I think a lot of it, I was frustrated by some of the problems that addiction was causing for him. I didn't try hard enough to maybe reach out to him more like I should have. I mean, that's what I'm thankful our family. We grew up so close. I proudly say I love my mother, I love my father, I love my family. We're so close. I have no problem saying these words, I love them. But like I said, I wish I would have reached out. There were certain times I did call, I called him, but then it was amazing. And one thing I do take with me, once I was on my way home from the funeral, I stopped at my dad's on the way home to break up the trip, going back to San Antonio, Texas. And I was going into my brother's room, whenever I saw something, it made me cry.
This is his Bible. I definitely cherish having this Bible. It was his. It was by his bedside. The moment I walked in and I saw the Bible, I just wept. I cried. I know that he did try to truly fight his addictions and fight his struggles. And I remember talking to him about the Bible and about the Lord, his love for the Lord. But this is something I do take great. My parents gave it to me, and it truly does mean a lot for me to have it. But as the years got on, I tried to find, I think, answers. I tried to look and maybe figure out just why it happened. I volunteered at different places, different rehab centers, Alcoholics Anonymous, Alan, you name it, places I probably tried and been there. And the moment I walked into a lot of these places, I could see my brother's, I think, face in a lot of those people. And then that's where my time and energy is, I think, invested now, to try to help other people maybe walk in down the same road as he is. I met one person there at one of the rehab centers. His name was Jim. Very nice. He's an older man. I think he was in his 60s. He had very bad alcoholic, very struggled with drugs as well, but now he's been clean for several years. And he thought I was someone looking for help, but I was looking for help, I think, in other ways. And he said, if you ever have a desire to drink or drugs, give me a call. And I was crying. I mean, I was thinking of my brother right then and there. Why couldn't I have done that for him? Why couldn't I maybe helped or called more? We get busy with our lives, families, jobs, careers. Why couldn't I have made that phone call to him? that's where I said life goals changed. I got my bachelor's degree. I've gotten into psychology, but I never thought I would now be trying to pursue a master's degree in clinical counseling. I never thought I would say I want to go work at a drug and rehabilitation center until now. And then also I want to look at in Matthew chapter 10:29, whenever God references that he knows every sparrow that falls. And I think that verse alone is so powerful, that God knows. He knows his children. He knows his, he knows our thoughts, desires. Amen. And I truly believe he knew my brother. And that verse is so powerful. I looked at that one quite often too. And as soon as I saw my brother's Bible, I said it was emotional for me. And that's what I asked any of y'all here, if y'all may be walking in similar struggles, later on you can pull me aside and hey Chad, that helped me out. Or I mean, if you have any questions or anything, I'll give you my phone number. You can call me any time of the day, and I truly do mean that. But this was, I know, kind of short. I may have been all over the place, but I do want to thank Elder Boyd for the time, being able to get up here and talk to you all. I just want to thank you all. Is that still, like I said, it's getting better. Every day I feel like I'm still hearing my dad's phone call. But if I remember hard enough, I can hear my brother's voice loud and clear saying, "I love you, Chad." But thank you for your time, and thank you for your attention.